The Lab takes the ethereal to the practical. Our podcast acts like a business school case study for private equity professionals, CEOs, operating partners, and chief transformational officers. We all know transformation is the key to differentiated alpha. Here's how you actually do it. Our audience tunes in to learn from those in the field, getting their fingernails dirty and driving meaningful growth through better operations, technology, and data. We learn from going to business school, teaching at business schools, and applying these lessons in the real world that case studies actually help the insight stick better. Come join us.
Hey, all. Well, welcome to the next episode here of the Lab Podcast. As always, here with Nick, but today we've got Ray with us. We have a special treat for everyone because we've got an executive, C-suite executive, and operating partner, which, you know, often doesn't go together. But Ray, super happy to have you on and looking forward to digging in.
Awesome. Yeah, I've worn both of those hats. I actually, before that, I was a banker and then an investor. And then a CEO or an operator, portfolio company, and now I'm an operating partner. So kind of circled all around the same companies and wore many of the different hats that all collaborate together to, you know, do a hard thing of building a company.
Yeah, well, creating value is always a hard part. And I'm sorry that, you know, we all share some of the same afflictions of recovering bankers and, you know, whatnot. But it's a cross we all have to bear, I guess, as they say. But listen, I'd love to get into your point just now, which is, you know, as a, you know, we do an awful lot of placement of operating partners in a wide variety of companies. And often we find that it's unusual to have someone who has the flexibility to be both the CEO and operating partner. It seems like it would make perfect sense, but, you know, as we've talked about in the past, CEOs, you know, demand things and hit you with a stick as opposed to an operating partner who has to cajole, convince, encourage, entice, generate sort of goodwill to get things done. So I'd be curious about your take on that and why you were able to be successful on both ends there.
I've been CEO three times. I've never hit anybody with a stick. And I will tell you, I really did think as a CEO, people say, like, oh, you're CEO, you tell people what to do. Nobody in any of my companies did anything I asked them to do, right? What the job I think of a CEO is to set up a series of kind of true north and goals and metrics and KPIs so that people self-assemble, right? I was hiring experienced, you know, individuals. Every companies were adults, and it was getting everybody to swim in the same direction. That was so much of what I thought about being a CEO. So it wasn't command and control. It was really very much like what I see in the operating partners is best practice, guidance. I think one thing that cuts across sort of any engagement model is data. You know, show people the data and they will self-assemble to do the right thing. So it's, I think, a lot less around a hierarchy of kind of who's in control and really saying, how are we getting alignment? What do we agree is important? We're all on the same side. You know, we are partnered with our portfolio executives. Everybody, we want all the equity to go up. Everybody has a job to do. And so I don't see it really fundamentally that different because I had to convince my executives why I thought things were good ideas, even though I was a CEO. And boy, did they push back. And oftentimes they were right. So I've said, I have a lot of ideas and some of them are good ones. That was true when I was a CEO. It's, you know, true, you know, here at Level Equity. We really have kind of a bespoke approach, both from an investment perspective as well as from an operating partner perspective, is meeting these companies where they are. And all companies have different challenges, different opportunities. I have a whole team of folks in different disciplines, sales, marketing, revenue operations, technology, finance, people. So we meet companies where they're at, and our advice and engagement model is not the same for any two companies. That being said, all of the companies, while they're unique snowflakes, they're all snow. They're almost all B2B software companies. And there are some things that make them absolutely the same that you can leverage modules, best practices. I did it across my three companies. And I think many of those things are applicable at many, if not all, of the Level portfolio companies.
Quick question, just jumping in, since you have both perspectives, how have you seen supporting founder CEOs compared to folks that may be, you know, second or third in that role? From what I understand, talking to PE folks, you know, it's challenging in the operating partner role sometimes to lean in and they kind of talk to that founder CEO you never want to tell them their kid's ugly, right? You're not investing in those type of portfolio companies anyway, I'm sure. But I've always imagined there's a bit more keeping things close to the vest there. What's your perspective?
So number one, my brother used to be a part-time comic, and he had this great joke that said, no one thinks their kid's ugly, but you know, ugly grownups don't come out of nowhere. So no, we're not in the business of telling anybody, like, we're not in the business of judgment. We're in the business of partnering and value creation, and everybody has a different experience set. So even if it's a multi-time CEO, I'm a multi-time CEO that has a finance and sales background. And so there's places I feel real comfortable, there's places I need a lot of help. I can still use sales and finance help. And so I wouldn't have this huge spectrum between founder and multi-time CEO. Obviously, if you have a multi-time CEO that has seen things in a repeatable way, they don't need the help. You pivot to somewhere else on their team. We may be engaging with their RevOps team, with Jen, our RevOps partner here, kind of in a different way. And I may not be engaged with the CEO in the same way. A founder who's seeing the movie for the first time, you know, that founder, you know, most I've met our founders, and our founders are hungry for help. They're looking to grow their company. And they're the first ones to say, I really understand this. It might be a product-led founder. You know, it might be an industry expert-led founder. And they're raising their hand saying, why do I have to reinvent the wheel? And so we're really engaging people where they, you know, where they need the help and where they don't have the expertise. And yeah, that's a little different with a founder, but it's not like this, you know, fundamental, you know, crack. I think it's more about who is the person. How do you identify the needs? How do you bring that data? And I've met, I don't know, probably 35 of the 50 portfolio CEOs here, and they got one thing in common. They all want to win. And I think that's where we're really centered around. And then what does it mean to win? Where do you apply the pressure? Where do you need operational help? And, you know, sort of drive that forward. That being said, I would tell you, like, I was never a founder, but my third company, you know, was much, much bigger than my second company, was much, much bigger than my first outcome. So repeat experience matters, but also I was not the Michael Jordan of CEOs, and Michael Jordan has a coach. So even our most experienced CEOs need some breath, because you get into a company and boy, do you get deep. But every day when you're in a company, you're sacrificing breath, because you can't get breath and depth. So everybody can use somebody on the sidelines that's looking in and bringing you some perspective, some depth, sort of some breath that you don't have when you're in a company maniacally focused on a single purpose problem.
Well, I imagine that's part of what your diligence is too. If, you know, not only is the company interesting and is it going to be, does the team want to win, but are they open to that help? That's part of the investment thesis. Is this the team that's going to benefit from us bringing best practices? So I guess it leads to the, you know, the statement of, I wish I knew sort of then what I know now. You know, any advice on, you know, individuals who have been in a C-suite or CEO role that want to move to operating partner role? And, you know, what have you learned and how do you think through best practices around that?
Yeah. Before I move, I'll tell you one thing that I learned in growing and selling businesses that I wished every time I did, and now I'm working with folks on, is, I guess coming from the banking background, I always had this in the back of my mind. I find a lot of our folks, whether they're in the portfolio or not, the biggest project they know they're going to have that they're not actively working on is what I call a capital rotation. I don't like the term exit, because a lot of times you don't go anywhere. Maybe you roll your equity, maybe something happens, but you're taking money from a private equity firm or a venture firm. Well, as soon as you do that, there's an obligation, a handshake to, at some point, you know, do a capital rotation. And many folks aren't actively working on that. They say, I'm going to build a great company and it will take care of itself. And I'm like, are there other big projects in your company that you're not, that are taking care of themselves? And the answer is no. And so the one thing I would tell you that I learned, I'm trying, is like, get ready and think about that as a project. There's a life cycle. Your company is going to be eternal, right? We're doing recurring revenue software companies, and you hope you can help your customers until the second coming, and you're going to hire employees that can build a 20-year career, but you might be in a 3, 5, 7-year capital rotation cycle. And so you have to work those things out. So really treating that like a project, preparing for it, being maniacally focused on it as part of the job that you took on as a CEO when you decided to take capital. So that's one thing that, like, I learned throughout the time. I mean, I think it helped the outcomes be better. And I'm trying to impart that on the portfolio. If you want to be an operating partner, I don't know, go try to make a private equity company a bunch of money. That helps.
Yeah. Yeah, they want more of it. I mean, one thing that they're good at is hiring the same people to do it again, because it's, listen, most PE firms are finance nerds like me and what you used to be and not real operators. I mean, there's operating partners, right? But most of the deal professionals, you know, grew up doing it that way. So as you're thinking about that, just to double click on that a bit, like, I love the idea of the capital rotation and treating it like a real project, because you're right, things don't magically happen, especially when you're in the CEO suite, because the buck stops there. What's an example of someone saying, well, the argument to that is all I got to do is keep increasing EBITDA. And, you know, like, so outside of growing the business, what are things that fall into that project category of being prepared for that capital rotation?
Yeah. We're working, you know, I've only been here for a little while. We're instituting a new process called Level Ups, and it's a series of operational excellence. You can make your company more operationally excellent. So yes, keep growing, you know, ARR or EBITDA or what your integer of choice is that you're going to apply a multiple to. So we prefer ARR to EBITDA, but it depends on the market and the business that you're in, certainly. But the question is, to me, EBITDA and ARR are things that happen. They're not things you can control. And so really, how do you get in and build plans for the constituents? I was talking to a CEO today, and I said, I've never met a company that missed bookings. He said, what? Never met a company. I said, you either missed on the number of deals or on price. Let's talk about your pricing. I thought we were going to increase average selling price this year. Do we have programs and projects to do that? Or were you going to increase? Nobody ever missed the number of new logos they were going to get. What they missed is their win rate, or they missed on their, you know, deal and lead generation. So I think sort of taking a step back and saying, how do you de-risk an awesome outcome is you break it down to the constituent parts. So it's easy to say, we just got to keep growing EBITDA. That's boardroom math. Tuesday morning math is, holy smokes, how are we going to do this? You know, you get a company that's a 40% grower, you start doing the math 3 years later, you've reinvented the entire company. And a lot of folks haven't, or we can help folks come back and do the math of like, what does it look to reinvent your business in 900 days. Holy smokes. Okay, let's break that down. It's like any other project. I know you don't like talking about yourself, but I know you were a great athlete. And so great athletes take a problem, you break it down into little problems, and you start attacking the little problems and you put it back together. So I think that's the same thing, I think, in many ways that we do and how we attack, you know, those problems. What does it look like to have an awesome outcome? What would that be like? How do you bring it back today and start just building mechanisms, metrics, plans and processes to have the best possible shot of getting that outcome?
That's awesome. How early on in the deal thesis or post-close are you leaning in and starting to get eyes on? I mean, this whole podcast we do is about value creation, right? Actually helping these companies execute on these strategic initiatives. So are you getting, we were talking before we started, kind of visualize it like a pie chart. Are you seeing 15-20% beforehand where you're saying, I think there might be some opportunity there, visualizing it and then executing on the back end? Walk us through that, how you guys do it at Level.
So when I was running a company, I had this little triangle. It's like just a simple mnemonic. When I woke up in the morning and I was like, I have customers that are all my bosses. I got employees that are all my bosses, and I have owners that are all my bosses, and I got to kind of serve them all and make sure we're all going in the same direction. So here at NLO, I have operating partners. So I'm the head of next level operations. I get operating partners that in theory work for me, but I really work for them. You guys know how leadership really works. And I got the whole deal team. I'm like, I work for the whole deal team. And then I work for all the limited partners. So I got owners, I got customers, that in my mind is portfolio executives and the deal team. And I got colleagues. And so I'm thinking about, how do I serve all of those? The deal team is out there prospecting, looking for new opportunities, building relationships, so they can call on NLO, and we're in there trying to meet companies, trying to show them the success we've had, the value creation we have. And if they partner with us, you know, money's one thing you get, you need money. But the real question is, what are you going to do with it? What are you going to do with the money? And so we get involved, I would say, in that prospecting process where we're looking for companies, but that's really to support the deal team in their sort of sourcing efforts. The deal team are expert investors, and so they are running the investment process, but we come in and help due diligence for two things. One, just to kind of inform and do some portfolio selection, but more importantly, to find those levers that say, if we do this deal, we have a plan, and we have a plan in each of these disciplines of ways that we can partner, engage with the company. Hopefully that makes it more likely that we're the right partner if everything lines up. And it also means we got a plan because, as I said, as soon as you hit day one, there's a responsibility that comes, you know, down the line with deploying that capital.
Listen, I totally agree with that. I love the way you think about it. And I feel like one of the reasons I've enjoyed the conversations with you historically and now is that you view the servant leadership. And private equity used to get away with things because they had all the capital and they didn't have to be lovely humans and didn't have to necessarily win the hearts and minds because they had the money. Now, not everyone's got the money, but everyone's got the money. So lots of people have lots of AUM. So it seems like you've bought into and Levels bought into the fact that you need to do things a little bit different and win the hearts and minds of your, where you are in that triangle, your, the portfolio of companies that you end up partnering with in between the capital rotations in a way that they say, hey, listen, these guys are different and they're really here to help as opposed to just annoying me for my, you know, monthly numbers and quarterly board reports.
Yeah. It could be a business model design at level. You know, I'm relatively new. I don't know. I think it might be that they're just good and kind people. And so some of this is, I'd like to tell you, it's a grand business strategy. It's just a more fun way to go through the day. And so I like what I do. I like the people that I work with. And that includes extensions out to portfolio executives. Boy, do I know their job is hard. The last thing I want to do is be an irritant in their day. The job, and I don't mean the job of a CEO, certainly the job of the CEO, but growing a small company into a company that's much larger is super hard. And a lot of people fail at it and it's stressful and there's lots of bumps and bruises. So if like we can get along and try to do that together, the bonus is you make some dough. Like that's the bonus, but it's just a good way to kind of get through the day.
You can make money and make friends at the same time. Who the
hell would it can be done?
It's crazy. Wow. Okay, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Put your CEO hat back on. We talked about what it looks like to be an operating partner and support him, but what is the one piece of advice you would give? Maybe you give to yourself, but you're the CEO and this operating partner you just get introduced to. What's the one piece of advice you would say, operating partner, this is how you can help me most? I know that's a generic question, but it can help.
It is advice that some need. A lot of folks already are doing it. So the first thing I would say is not everybody needs it, but the folks that need it, I would say practice transparency. Practice transparency with your partners. Practice transparency with your team. If everybody's operating with the same data, you're going to get really good outcomes. If somebody's trying to, you know, use data upstream to kind of, they've already adjudicated an outcome, that's times when you're like, man, why are we just not agreeing on, like, this shouldn't be so hard to get, you know, to get all aligned. And so really transparency in data, transparency in outcomes. And that is with your private equity partners. That's with your board. That's with your team. I think that's probably advice number one. A lot of the folks are doing a great, great job of it. So I don't want to suggest that it's needed. But if anybody's like, geez, I wonder if it's like just good news, bad news, whatever. Let's just deal with it. We're all in it together. Let's get the raw material and see what we can make out of it.
Yeah, well, speaking of practicing transparency, as we're coming to a close, I mean, some of us may have done some things athletically in the past that were interesting, but none of us were Olympic athletes. So since you were, how good was Michael Phelps?
Unbelievable.
Because he seemed pretty good. I just don't know.
Dude, I got to swim with some of the best swimmers in history, and they were all, some of them were unbelievable trainers. Some of them just had a knack of winning and were like quick at the end. You know, some of them were stroke technicians. Some of them took care of their, you know, their body and their, in the way they eat. He did all of the things that would make, if you did one of them, you could be an Olympian. I trained really hard. Like I'm a like short, regular guy that just trained and trained and trained. So I did one thing right. I got to the Olympics. Michael Phelps did like everything you could be, giant body right or whatever. And that's what made him just off the charts.
And seemed like, again, outside looking in, so I don't want to, it seems like a nice person too, which is always, you know, good guys. I mean, successful people aren't always great people and we're all have our shortcomings and flaws, but it's cool that you had that experience yourself.
Yeah, well, I didn't have it with him. He's quite a bit younger than I am. So, and he was quite a bit faster than I am too, but a super impressive guy.
Yeah. Well, listen, it's also impressive what you've done. And it's the fun part about our job, what we do and Nick, and, you know, we get to spend time ourselves with people that have done it right repetitively. So thanks for, you know, letting us bend your ear and catching up with us, and, you know, looking, hopefully the listeners will enjoy the conversation as well. There's some great nuggets of help in there.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
That's right.
Thanks, guys.
Hope you guys enjoyed that. Thanks again to Ray for joining. That was great. You know, one thing, Scott, we talk about a lot is there's so many damn firms out there. I'd never even heard of Level Equity. They're doing some great stuff. They're hiring some great people, clearly helping their portfolio companies. So for one, it's really cool to see how many firms are out there doing it a little differently. One of the main things that we talked about there, and I'd just love to pick your brain and your perspective, is he's a CEO, now an operating partner. He's supporting CEOs. How often is that? Like, I know you're placing a lot of former operators. I kind of think that a CIO, CFOs in operating partner positions. Are you placing a lot of CEOs, and do you see that transitioning well?
Yeah. Oh, listen, first on your first point, it is amazing that they've got, you know, Level's got $3 billion of committed capital and 100, you know, investments they've made over the last, you know, since inception. And so whether the firms are, you know, old school house names or not, there's lots of people creating a lot of value. And part of it is by finding guys like Ray. And so it is unusual that you find, you know, it used to be you take a CEO and put him as an operating partner. But the difficulty is CEOs usually get things done, you know, is by demanding it. And, you know, you not control, convince, encourage, entice. So he's done a nice job historically making that transition. Part of it is, you know, maybe I don't speak to a lot of Olympic athletes on a regular basis. Nice that he adds that in his, you know, sort of quiver of opportunities in sort of muscle memory, and a banker and a CEO and operating partners. He's done a lot of things. And therefore, I think he's done a nice job and is successful being able to relate to folks. And I think that's the key for operating partners is it's easy to forget that you at one point were in a situation like the CEO or the C-suite that you're working with. And because you do as an operating partner sometimes, or a deal professional, not 10, not 20, but, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of deals, you get a little bit numb to it. And you have to remember that each deal is specific, and the management team that's running that business, this may be their first go at it. And so doesn't mean they're not good executives. They just don't have the same level of muscle memory that someone else had. So long way of saying it's unusual to have someone be a really good CEO and a really good operating partner. And that's why we wanted to have him on, because he can sort of talk from so many different angles.
I love it. Yeah. I mean, I thought his perspective and insight was great. And look, that's the goal of this podcast, right? We say it every time, but speaking to folks like him, and it's not lost on me ever, anytime we're talking to an Olympic athlete coming on here. Funny how there's some common themes in professional achievement that comes after being such a stellar athlete. So we're obviously biased to that because we like athletes. We were athletes. You were a really good athlete, you know? So good for you.
Well, like everything in life, it's was and were, not is.
It's true. Well, the one thing we can say is we will, and we are building out this podcast. So we'll be back again. This will probably be the last drop of 2023. We have some great folks lined up for 24. We'll be dropping our webinar that we did with a couple operating partners into a podcast episode. So stay tuned. The lab will only continue to grow going into 24. And thanks for listening.
Thanks all.